The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Sitting on a bar stool, kind of short and kind of square, through the foam in his mustache, his voice filled the air, talking about a state of mind.
The following is a encore presentation of Jefferson State of Mind, recorded last week, November 24th. Enjoy the show.
It's a wave on a dusty road. It's a logger's heavy load. It's a wave on a dusty road. It's a logger's heavy load. It's a cattle on the hill. It's a range full of thrills. It's a way of life. Settles in
it settles in your soul. Yes, it does. Good morning, everybody. This is Terry Raposa, Jefferson State of Mind, with my co-host, the First Lady of Jefferson, Janet Chandler. How are you, my dear?
Good morning. And don't you just know that the angels are crying copious tears of joy because of the election of Trump, and that's why we have all this rain? I got that direct from Frankie.
Did you?
I did.
That's a Frank Rose-ism.
It is, yes.
That's Rose 411.
Uh-huh, yeah. And that's why we have all this rain.
That's why we have the rain.
Yeah. And I'll take it if that's the reason for it.
Oh, man, I'll take that, too. We're here this morning broadcasting live from KCNR Studios in downtown Reading, 96.5 FM, where the music does sound better, 1460 AM. We are your talk radio, and we are streaming live on KCNR1460.com, KCNR1460.com. If you have a comment or a question, the phone number is 530-605-4567, 605-4567. And we are excited this morning because we are here with Dr. Laura Hobbs. Everybody in Shasta County and probably in many counties in the state of California are having a very egregious problem, everything from overspray to underspray to side spray to I wish they'd spray or they didn't spray or spray the next time. Unbelievable things that are going on in this state. And Laura's going to bring us up to date on some of these things. And Laura, welcome this morning.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me on.
You know, you've done such great research on everything. And the thing I think that's so paramount about this and why we like doing this on a live stream that goes all around the world is because many of the things you're talking about reflect not only to our county, but to our state and, frankly, to a degree, some other states. So why don't we get right into it? Give us a little tiny bit of background. I want to hear a little bit more about this overspray business, these ballots, and then I want you to go into what you have new.
Okay. So right now they're saying that Runbeck printed these in a way that caused the overspray.
That's the person who makes the ballots, correct?
Yes, Runbeck's the person who prints them. Hart is the company that scans them. That's the ones that have the tabulator. And the way this works is that Hart produces what they're calling their Verity Ballot Printing Guidelines. This tells you the specifications for printing ballots, the type of grain, the type of, it has to be virgin wood, opacity,
yes.
Type of paper, everything, right. The orientation, all that has for the printers, the technical knowledge. So they're given this information, or they can get it themselves, from Hart directly. And apparently there was something in those directions that they did not follow. So I took a look at the guidelines. There's 59 pages of guidelines just how to print these ballots correctly, right? But there's also specific instructions to the ROV themselves saying that, because Hart also offers their own trademark ballots that you could purchase through them that you know will work with their machines, But it says if you choose to use a third-party vendor, such as Runbeck, or if you print them in-house, then you must follow these steps. And the steps are very clear. They say that you need to test all ballots before sending it out to the voting population. So it's simple. But it's something that a step that was missed in this election is they did not do a test and actually scan the ballots through the machines to make sure that they were scannable before sending it out to the voting population.
Are they required to do that?
If you're following the manufacturer's instruction to a T, absolutely. And what they used instead, from what I understand from Joanna Francesca, is they used a test batch that was printed separately from the ballots they sent out to voters. So their test batch performed fine, according to her. But I have to take her word for it because they have refused to release the results of the logic and accuracy testing of these ballots. So that's just... you know, a situation of blind trust. Unfortunately, we were hoping for more transparency in what we're getting this election is actually less transparency than we've ever had before.
So, and Mr. Toller is our new ROV officer. So,
yes.
He apparently isn't really living up to the billing. Is that what you're kind of saying?
No, he's not living up to the billing. Understandably, he's under a lot of stress, but at the same time, you still have obligations to the public. If you want to have a public election and make things transparent, you need to release these very key items. During a press release, I asked him why he has not released this. He says this is not the appropriate time yet. I've since, you know, asked him again for documents. He says he can't produce anything because they're under so much stress trying to get everything duplicated and scanned in time.
Why is it so arduous?
Well, it's complicated. What happened is we have a system that's defective. It's not following the manufacturer's specifications, you know, on a number of different levels, the ones we just talked about. It could be something where the ROV did not do it correctly or the vendor didn't do it correctly. But the fact of the matter is that the system is not performing as it should have. And instead of going to a simplified solution, such as hand counting, which is obvious, you don't need any fancy scanners to be able to read barcodes. You just need humans who can count votes. So instead of doing that, which they would have all legal authority to do a hand count right now, even given AB 969, instead of doing that, they went towards adding another machine, adding another layer of complexity into the system. And there's a quote by someone who I don't like very much, actually, but the quote is spot on. It says, "The first rule of technology used in business is that automation applied to an efficient operation will magnify efficiency. The second is that automation applied to inefficient operations will magnify the inefficiency." And Bill Gates said that in 2019.
Well, so, you know, broken clock is right twice a day.
Yeah.
So Bill Gates was a success. He didn't get it right sometimes.
So it's just and part of the problem is it makes you wonder, is this complexity something that they wanted to have happen?
Oh, I don't think there's any doubt of that.
I know Thomas Toller didn't want it to happen, no. But was there somebody at some level somewhere?
I couldn't agree with you more there. I mean, there's no way around that. Now, what about code 19101? You were talking about the other day, I watched an interview you did, and I recommend people watch the last Sovereign Minds interview on Mountaintop Media. It's Sovereign Minds, the podcast. You can find it on Facebook or Rumble, and you started talking about different things that were really very, very, that's a great interview. Laura does an interview on there, and it's, I recommend you watch it. Anyway, give us a little background on that.
Yeah, okay, so the Secretary of State sets forth the guidelines for voting systems. Now, a voting system is just a machine that tabulates votes. So in our case, it's Hart InterCivic. And they have guidelines. The rest of the country, they use what's called EAC guidelines, which are voluntary election assistant commission guidelines. But the Secretary of State, instead of using the EAC, they have their own voter system guidelines, which are in some cases more stringent than the EAC guidelines, but in some cases they're exactly the same. And in the case of the voting system standards that you're mentioning the 19101, it says that the voting machine must perform the job that it's intended to perform, basically. And that's part one of 19101. So it's very basic instruction, like the machine has to work, you know. And in this case, it's clearly not working as it's intended to work. But there's other things in that voting system guidelines that specifically relate to the situation we're in right now. We have a very high rejection rate of approximately 50% of the ballots that go through. And let's see, I'll give you the exact...
Sure.
Okay, so according to the California Voting System Guidelines 4.1.5.1, ballot handling, it says that there must be a paper misfeed rate of no more than 1 in 100. And it goes on to describe what a misfeed rate is, which is basically any time that a paper jams or a ballot is rejected by the machine. So right now we have a 50% rejection rate. They're saying that it should be no more than 1 in 500 ballots that get rejected.
And we have a what, 1 in 15?
No, 1 out of 2 get rejected.
1 out of 2?
Yes, 1 out of 2 get rejected.
In Shasta County?
In Shasta County. So
folks,
clearly,
did you hear that?
Yeah.
But let's not hand count,
let's
because
not
that's so inaccurate.
1 out of 2. Okay, so that's a big point. Can you, what was the, what is the ROV officer saying about this stuff? Have you heard? Have you talked to them? Go ahead.
Well, Thomas is not really being forthright. He says that he's doing the most accurate thing he believes by getting this run back duplication system in. And he's claiming that he's got 9 sets of eyes on each ballot, which is true and not true at the same time.
How is that?
Well, it's not 9 sets of eyes looking at one process. It's 1 set of eyes looking at this process, 1 set of eyes looking at that process. And so at no point in time do you have more than 1 set of eyes on the process. The fact that it is a complicated process, and I don't know if you want me to go over kind of the flow chart of the directionality.
Well, if you could break it down to simplicity, it'd be
okay.
Great. Okay.
So it goes to the bat cave, gets scanned. If it gets rejected, it goes into...
The bat cave is their terminology for a certain room, correct?
Yeah, that holds the heart machines. Okay. There's 4 tabulators there. If it gets rejected, it goes into the limbo room.
Which is
where they're housing the runback duplication system.
Laura, what causes a ballot to be rejected?
Well, we don't exactly know. This is somewhat similar to what happened to Carrie Lake, and she had a situation where the ballots were being rejected, and they asked everyone to put the ballot in box number 3, and they said it was the size of the ballot, and then there's also a factor of the weight of the ballot, and then there's some factors about the printing. But basically what happens is, you know, if the machine can't read that barcode, for whatever reason, if it's off-center or if there's an overspray issue, then the machine cannot compute. It just cannot.
So this isn't even the fault of the ballot marker, voter.
No, it's certainly not a fault of the voter. But these little printed barcodes on the side of each ballot are what tell the machine what to do with it. And it can't read those markers, and so it's rejecting the ballots.
Got it. Okay, so okay. We were at the Bat Cave. Went from the Bat Cave to the Limbo Room.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead, proceed.
And it's aptly named the Limbo Room because there's a lot of things that go in there, and none of them really make a lot of sense, are very clear. But basically they start duplicating the ballots using the runback system. They make a new ballot, and then they send the ballots over to the break room to be quality control checked by a person working in a team of one who cannot be overseen by any election observers. So they're working in private without oversight of anybody. Then the batch comes back into the limbo room, and then at that point the original gets boxed up and put away.
Okay.
And the duplicated ballot, if it passes through and there's no sticky marks on the edge, which means that some of the markings of the voters didn't match or weren't correctly duplicated, or it means that it's missing its mate, its partner. If everything is a pass and a go, then it goes back to the bat cave.
Got it.
And so it's just this bidirectional flow where even a regular absorber doesn't really understand, has that batch already been scanned once or twice? Is it being double scanned? You know what I mean? Someone watching from the outside should be able to see, okay, yeah, they scanned that batch, they're done with it, they put it away, it's over there now, and it's not being, that same batch isn't being rescanned again. But with the complication of the rejected ballots, the system is so convoluted that it's impossible for an observer to have any meaningful access of what's going on. So that's the summary.
Wow.
How are they getting away with it?
Well,
I thought it was one in, like there's supposed to be like one in every 125,000, Dave. There's supposed to be that if there's a problem with one in every 125,000, that's the limit there can be. We can't even get them counted. I mean, this is beyond. And I do want to go back to something else and get your thoughts on that. Janet, your thoughts on this.
I do have a question first, though. You talked about duplicating the ballot. Why?
They say that once they duplicate it, it can be then scanned by the tabulator and
tabulated. So it can't be scanned before they duplicate it.
Yeah, it cannot. It's rejected during
the
scanning process. But if they put it on a new paper with a new barcode on it, then it can be scanned and...
So they're duplicating only those ballots that have been rejected.
Yes, which is half of all ballots.
Just half. See, that's the thing. So, I'm wondering if the norm is one mistake in every 125,000, and we're one out of two, and we're getting a lot of the excuse that our ROV officer is new, but I mean, at what point you say, okay, you probably have one of the most important jobs in the county, and you're using the excuse that you're new. Were you not prepared for your job? I'm really getting tired of hearing that.
Yeah, I agree. And that excuse only goes so far with the people. But I just want to correct you on the 1 in 25,000. That's for
125.
Or 125. That's for the accuracy of the tabulation.
Oh, okay.
But if the ballot's rejected, it doesn't even get to that point. It's, you know, it's cut off.
It's more egregious.
Yeah. It's more egregious, but they use a different metric, which is the misfeed rate, mm-hmm. and that's 1 in 500.
I see.
So, yes, I think that if I were in the position of ROV and I saw that there was opportunity at that point to do the most simple and direct thing, which is hand counting, which is legal, especially in cases where you have emergency or electronic machine malfunction, then I would take that route. I would do something that would be clear and transparent for everyone to see. I would not choose an overly complicated system to resolve a problem which is already too complex. And I just want to go over a couple of laws to demonstrate that fact, that even with AB 969, as a result of AB 969, they produced a new law, which is 15207.3. And that says that you may conduct a manual vote count in the event of a natural disaster or other state of emergency in which use of a certified voting system is not feasible. So that was a result of AB 969. They had that written into law saying that you can use a manual count if a situation like what we're experiencing arises. And then previous to AB 969, we had California Election Code 19005, and it says that in the case of an emergency, you may count the voted ballots pursuant to Article 5, commencing with Section 15270, which is a whole section of law that describes how to conduct a hand count.
Okay.
So even before AB 969, we had laws saying in place for people who are using voting systems to say, okay, in the case of a failure, electrical failure or other emergency, you may hand count. So there's nothing, like, at this point, we don't even need a new ordinance to hand count.
Right.
There's nothing impeding a hand count right now.
Well, who has jurisdiction over the implementation of this? Who has the jurisdiction, the final jurisdiction of implementing this?
Well, there's two people. The ROV himself could do that, which obviously we know he's not going to take that route, which I think is a failure that he is making in his position. But the Board of Supervisors also can direct that. We could have an emergency meeting now saying that, and the county of Shasta, you know, insists upon doing a manual hand count. But in addition to that, I want people to know that even if the machines were functioning 100% smoothly, no rejections or minimal rejections, we could still have an ordinance in effect here in Shasta County that says we're going to do 100% manual hand count audit every single election. And what that would do is that would mean that perhaps our official tally would be by the machines, but we would always have that hand count as a point of comparison to see whether or not the machines are accurate as a way to audit.
I'd like to know if there are any supervisors listening to this, please call in, because I'm a little confused why this hasn't been implemented. Now, I've heard that it takes a lot of people to hand count, but I know at one point we had around 300 that were interested in helping. I mean, everybody in this room would help.
Yeah, more than 400.
Yeah, last February was it when Rand Paul was here?
Yeah.
They had a hand counting demonstration.
Yeah.
And it looked like it was working very well, and it was a success.
That was actually Clinton Curtis at the Holiday Inn.
That was it. Okay.
Clinton Curtis at the Holiday Inn, and they had, and you guys did it in 3 hours or something.
Yeah. But obviously, then the answer is that somebody doesn't want an accurate count. Somebody doesn't want a hand count. Somebody politically does not want to satisfy the people with a hand count.
Yeah, I'm just surprised because I've heard that. I hear it every time from Kevin Cry, every time from Patrick, every time from Chris Kellstrom about hand counting. And now you're telling me that the jurisdiction to implement that is within their jurisdiction and they've never done it?
Absolutely.
Somebody needs to explain that. I mean, I'm not trying to be accusatory, but somebody needs to explain that to me.
We want our employees to give us answers as to why this election system was so messed up beyond explanation.
And Laura, can you help me understand? So you're not accusing malicious intent, right? You're just saying, hey, we've got a solution that will fix these problems so we can certify this thing. Is that right?
Well, yes and no. I'm saying that the system they're using right now leaves gaping holes where malicious intent could come into play. If we had a system where we did hand counting, it was clear and transparent, it was done in a way that everyone could see that was fair, it would be a lot harder for malicious actors to take advantage of us.
Yeah, what she's saying is it opens the door. Nobody's getting accused of anything here.
Yeah.
It's opening the door.
And the public could trust it more.
Well,
yeah.
Transparency always works that way, Dave. You're 100% right. You know, that's why we wanted transparency, and apparently we were promised that. And I want to, this has been great, Laura. I can't thank you again for informing us, and we're going to have to take our break now. We'll come right back with Dr. Laura Hobbs, Janet Chandler, and Terry Raposa. Time has come.
For 51.
Let's get it done.
When the leaves start falling and the air turns cold, we gather round the table, both young and old. With hearts full of joy and plates piled high, we share stories and laugh as time flies by. Mama's in the kitchen baking her famous pie. Kids are running around playing games outside. Heads bowed at the table, giving thanks for all we've got. For life's blessings and love, things that can't be bought.
I'm Tracy Edwards, CEO of the Redding Rancheria.
Turtle Bay's 5th annual Redding Garden of Lights is back for another fun-filled holiday season, open on select dates from November 22nd through January 5th, featuring over 10 acres of outdoor illuminated gardens filled with 2 million lights. Don't miss this year's new additions, including new light displays and premium ticket packages, plus holiday-themed food, drinks, music, glowing swings, model trains, and much more. Redding Garden of Lights is presented by Mercy Medical Center Redding. Buy tickets now at turtlebay.org.
The property insurance crisis in California is starting to affect the business insurance property also. 200 to 300% rate increases in business property rates or not writing business insurance at all are becoming the norm. At Siskiyou Insurance, we have over 100 years experience in writing business insurance in the North State. We can help. We live here and care about our community and want to make sure that you keep your business with a local agent that knows our town and supports it every day. And we'll get you the best deal we can. Call Curtis Byron at Siskiyou Insurance Services, 530-224-2345 or 1-800-773-2345. Siskiyou Insurance, 530-224-2345 or 1-800-773-2345.
Get ready, rodeo fans. From December 4th to the 7th, we're bringing you live coverage straight from the National Finals Rodeo.
Tune in as we go behind the scenes with exclusive interviews featuring contestants, stock contractors, and even the president of the PRCA.
Whether you're a diehard fan or just love the excitement of the rodeo, you won't want to miss a second of the show.
Join us live from the National Finals Rodeo, December 4th through 7th from 7 to 9 a.m.
Brought to you by the Redding Rodeo Association and Redding Rancheria, bucking by the river.
The following is an encore presentation of We the People, recorded last week, November 24th. Enjoy the show.
Back into my hometown. Funny how this all looks different, but it feels the same. Like how life never stops changing, some things never change. So fill your plate and fill your drink and fill this house with family. The kind of love that all these years can't wash away. Cause the older that I get, I see the light short and bittersweet. Thank God for this Thanksgiving Day.
Thanksgiving Day. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone. I hope it's going to be a great one for you and a blessed one for you. Thank you, Sal, baby, for that song. And I have to say something about Sally. She's been writing some things lately, and I am just one specific thing she was talking about were things about, you know, what the right believes as opposed to the left, what the election of Trump means and what it could bring. And it was just, it's brilliantly written stuff. And anyway, baby, it was great. Thanks for doing the music. And getting back to our guests. We're going to talk about maladministration. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. And this is Laura Hobbs, Dr. Laura Hobbs, talking about maladministration. I learned a new thing just now.
Okay. Well, yes. So for maladministration, you do not have to prove intent. It's actually...
Rather than malicious...
Yeah, you don't have to... When we were speaking about the malicious actors and whatnot, I believe this is more a case of maladministration. And one thing that happens as far as when you have a contractor such as Runbeck working for the county, they're actually considered like an arm of the county. So if Runbeck does something that is a maladministration of our elections, it falls back on the shoulders of Shasta County as the ones who are responsible for the maladministration of the election.
Richard is on the line. Richard, do you have a question or a comment? I know that I had a feeling you'd call in the minute something went about the law. Anyway, my friend, what's on your mind?
Well, a few things. So yes, hand counting is important. But
can you speak up, Richard? We can barely hear you.
Yeah, is that any better?
A little bit. Go ahead.
Okay. As far as hand counting is concerned, while that is important, remember, the ballots come from a dirty voter roll. We have to clean the voter rolls. Laura was talking about these additional processes that are occurring due to the scanning rejection and the duplication and the substitute machinery, scanning machinery. And a question for Laura, and I have a couple of questions, but the first question is, so Laura, when these elections workers are looking at these additional processes that you say are not observable, are these election workers handling ballots by themselves?
In many cases, yes, and they say as long as there's somebody else in the room, that's okay. If they're sitting there doing the QC check in the break room by themselves, if there's someone else in the room, say on a different table across the room, doing the same thing by themselves, they consider that satisfying the rule of two.
Okay, yeah, all right. That was going to be my comment, but no, that sounds like a violation of the rule of two, and they're redefining the rule of two is what they're doing. Mm. So my next question is, Laura, I believe it's the federal elections that require accurate tabulation within 1 in 125,000. Is that correct?
That's the federal standards, yes.
And so my question is, these substitute scanning machines that have come in, multiple times these substitute scanners have been shown to erase marks from the voter's intent. Patrick Jones has observed it. CEO Rickert has observed it multiple times. And we only have 115,000 registered voters, so being that that has occurred 3, 4, 5 times just witnessed by observers, that already violates that standard, does that not?
You know, that's a good question, and I believe it would. However, we have no testing on these machines. I don't know by what means they do logic and accuracy testing. If they do, they claim that they were done off-site, and then the testing was done off-site and then brought here. I also witnessed an error rate of approximately one error per minute on average. They've seen the same thing in Nevada County, a very, very high error rate. It's fine if you have operators that are 100% with it, but what I saw last week was they had three individuals from the Secretary of State come in to help us, and one of those individuals was clearly just dialing it in. I wasn't able to have direct view over her monitor because she was in the far corner. However, she was clearly glazing over. She was scrolling down without actually verifying that the match, the voter's intention matched on the duplicate ballot. And then at one point, and I knew that she was scrolling because at one point she actually scrolled on past, and she, you know, it's supposed to bring up two images on the monitor. The first one is the original image, and the second one is the duplicate image. So she's in charge. She's scrolling down with the mouse, and she doesn't even have a duplicate image in front of her. And she's scrolling on down as if she's got one. And her partner's reading off the calls on
these
the original.
These people are from the Secretary of State
yes.
of California's office.
Yes. They came up last week to help as temporary help. They came up for
wow.
They were here for a couple of days, and then they left. But it just,
right.
When you know you're not
you know
allowed
what?
Meaningful observation, you can't see behind the shoulder of these people. And then you have people that, some of them are doing an excellent job in catching all these mistakes. But if you have a system where mistakes are baked in the cake, and you have that combined with an operator who's, you know, tired, weary, just dialing it in, then you have a problem that's rife with errors, and you just, it's not a suitable system.
No. This, we are now into the arena of Kabuki Theater, and if our Board of Supervisors declares the certification of this election, we're going to get into some uncharted territory. I have one more important point here, Laura. And Laura is somebody that I believe, between her and I, she and I delve into the elections, processes, codes, and regulations. I believe more than anybody else in Taft County, probably. Maybe there's somebody else. But here's the deal. A certified election system, okay, are these substitute scanning machines? I don't know of any regulation or law. Maybe Laura does. I don't believe these emergency substitute scanning machines are part of the approved voting system. And if that's the case, they're invalid on their face. Now, unless Laura has other information, I think they're invalid on their face.
I have no information to say otherwise. I believe you're correct on that.
I have a couple questions.
I do too.
Yeah, but I do too.
So I've got
a couple questions. Rich?
That is not approved by the Secretary of State.
Yeah, Rich? I've got a couple questions, maybe for the both of you. One is if the election does not get certified, number one, is it if the Board of Supervisors certifies the election, can they be overridden? First question, yes or no?
Well, we have to be correct with our nomenclature here. The registrar certifies and the Board of Supervisors declare. Now, the state law reads that the Board of Supervisors shall declare. But here's the point that
What if they don't declare? That was my question.
Okay, I understand your question, but there's a path to the answer to your question. The key here is that the Board of Supervisors have that authority to vote on the declaration or not.
Okay.
The state mandates that they shall vote in a one specific manner, that they must vote yes. Why would they even be given the opportunity to vote if the state's going to mandate how they vote?
Well, that's kind of where I was going. So that's where I'm going here, sir.
Yeah, they need to sign it as signed under duress. That would be the way I would do it.
Let me finish my point. Last election, Joanna and others said, well, it's ministerial to vote for the board to declare. It's ministerial. It's just something they're supposed to do. No, I reject that argument. If they're going to vote, they say, well, we're told to vote, but we're going to vote how we see fit, and then we're going to go down uncharted territories.
Well, the thing, Rich, is that you're voting on this. What they give the Board of Supervisors, I looked at this in previous elections, they give them the ROV's certification of the vote. And they ask them
to vote,
yes, and there's actual certificate with a seal and a signature. And
correct.
It says on that signature that the results are true and accurate. And if the
correct.
Supervisor does not believe that, they should not sign their name to that.
Does it hold water if they don't sign their name to it? Does it hold water, or can it still be certified?
I think that's kind of uncharted. Yeah, exactly. Thank you, Rich. But if it's okay, I thank you I wanted to talk about some important information that we found out just in the last week.
One quick point. Marley Hornick said that California certified, even though they did it without it really being able to be certified in the last election. That's what United Sovereign Americans. There's a novice at this and just one of the folks out here. That's my question. So it's not really uncharted because California did it during the last election. It's proven. It's in court right now. So that's my question. So if the Board of Supervisors certifies it or doesn't, are they the final answer? Well, apparently not, according to United Sovereign Americans and the court case they have. Anyway, go ahead, Laura.
Okay, that'll be really interesting to see how that pans out.
Yes, go ahead.
I did want to go into some of the issues that we saw in the March primary and the audit log, because this is important. This has to do with the HART's tabulation system. What they saw was, of course, we had a time change during that period, and only two of the four machines updated to the new time period, indicating that perhaps two were connected to the internet and got the information and updated. But there's another way they could do it in the back end as well. But in either case, the four tabulator machines were not uniformly formatted or configured. So then with the help of Steve Umfleet, he was able to look at the audit logs. And he spent hundreds of hours looking at them. He found 22 time changes, two that were automatic, and then 20 that were user-initiated time changes. And then basically he went in and he looked at those time changes. So a lot of them were occurring in the middle of the night, like 10 p.m., 2 a.m., and we were looking at the video footage from that night at the elections office to see if there was somebody in there working, making those changes.
Right.
And sure enough, there's nobody there. However, Thomas Toller insisted that, yes, there was a worker in the building during that time. And then later he changed his story and he said, that I misspoke, he said.
There was nobody there. That was actually 2 p.m. in the afternoon, not 2 a.m. in the morning. And he said that was 10 a.m. in the morning, not 10 p.m. So he changed his story. There was an access code apparently given to the elections worker in order to enter the system and make these time changes. But of these 20 time changes, there were a lot of things that just did not make sense. And one of the things that we recently found out, just to give you an idea, the time changes ranged from seconds to hours to days. They went forward and they went backward. And so Steve Umfleet just discovered that in 12 instances out of a possible 16 instances, because 4 instances had no prior event update, there appear to be a difference that is in a multiple of exactly 60 seconds. So what happened was exactly 60 seconds after the first time change, a second time change was initiated. And there's 4 devices, and over these 4 devices, a lot of these time changes occurred on device 706, but there were also some in all the other devices as well. And there's 4 devices total, like I said. So basically, the precision required for human activity to achieve this level of consistency of it, precisely 60-second intervals, is really just impossible. So it leaves open the question is,
wow,
were these time changes an intrusion into the system? And were they automated? Were they scripted? It sounds kind of like a computer script that is telling it, okay, in exactly 60 seconds, you'll change the time again. And part of the reason why this...
what else could it be?
Yeah, what else could it be? Is this something they're using to hide an intrusion? And part of what happens through these multiple time changes is you lose track of the orientation of what happened when. And so, you know, hackers or somebody intruding the system can use that to their advantage, but part of those Secretary of State's voting system guidelines that I spoke about mandates that the precision of the timekeeping mechanism shall be able to distinguish and properly order all audit records. This is in the operational requirements 2.1.5.1. And we also know that in the system there was corrupted audit logs. There's 2 cases of corrupted audit logs on 2 different devices on March 4th.
Wow.
So we have a serious problem, and Hart InterCivic was invited to Shasta County to come discuss this problem. They said we need another week, and then after that they said, you know, we can't show up because in order to answer these questions we need to have our CEOs or executives here. So what they're doing is, obviously, they know this is a huge problem, and they are guarding their words extremely carefully about what they say regarding this. This is a big deal, and the fact that they are afraid to speak and to try to write off, you know, what's happening means that that we have a serious issue that has to be addressed, that these machines cannot be trusted, they should not be used. And we need answers.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great explanation of everything. Thank you. And, you know, I mean, I'm trying to figure out who can do what here. You know, who really has the authority to do what here in cleaning up this mess?
It's everybody else's problem. Oh, I can't do it.
Somebody has the jurisdiction. That's what I'm trying to find out. I mean, I don't care whether they want to do it or they're passing the buck or anything. I want to know who has jurisdiction over this. Because if you don't know who to call on the carpet, then what do you do? Okay, you know, we're hearing, first of all, it's the ROV. It's the Board of Supervisors. And then can the Board of Supervisors certify? What if they don't? Can the state tell them to pound sand? Why were there 2 people from the Secretary of State's office here? Maybe you can answer that
one.
Why were they here?
They were here to help out, just as an attempt.
They were requested to be here.
I guess, yeah. Thomas Toller said, okay, go ahead and come out and you can help.
Okay.
But I think what this boils down to is jurisdiction. And to answer your question is, right now the board is writing a letter to the DOJ to describe these problems and inconsistencies with the audit log. However, the jurisdiction rests here in Shasta County.
It's good to write a letter to them to explain what's going on. However, in order to actually see action, especially with the current outgoing administration, we're not going to see any action from this letter to the DOJ.
No.
We have to take action locally. We have to claim our sovereignty and take care of this ourselves. It's completely within the California state law to do so. So part of the thing, part of the game is they keep you pointing fingers at somebody else. They keep you pointing fingers at Runbeck, at Hart. You know, maybe the ROV did something. But the point is, the problem here is with the county. And the solution is also with the county.
But the county is not an entity. The county is people. And which person within the county has the ultimate responsibility? And it sounds to me like it's the ROV. That's where the solutions
lie.
Sounds
to me like it's the board of supervisors.
Well, the person who has the ultimate responsibility is we the people.
That's right. We always have had it. And you know, that's the thing. And so when we elect these people and put them in office, we have to hold them. You've cited on this show three laws mm-hmm. that clearly show that we need a hand count. Clearly. You've cited on this show that hand counting is a legal process in which we are, in some cases, by law, encouraged to use when the other stuff doesn't work.
It's the gold
standard by which they test
machines.
Absolutely. So if that's the case, the Board of Supervisors, I believe, has a jurisdiction to say, hey, we need to do it this way. And if not, Tom Toler does. What the hell?
Yep. And as long as nobody is making them uncomfortable for the decisions they've made, they're just going to keep...
Or not made.
They're just going to keep doing what's easy and what's comfortable. And that's why I think it rests in the hands of we the people. We have to get up there, say something, do something, you know, make our concerns be heard.
And then we have the Board of Supervisors members who say, well, your candidate won the election. Why are you complaining? Because it isn't to get my candidate to win. It's to get the election to be fair.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, the point is we haven't elected, no matter who elected them, we have them. That's who we have. And it doesn't matter whether you elected Stalin. You know, it doesn't matter who you elected. The point is who has jurisdiction. We know who has jurisdiction. We know two elected entities have jurisdiction. We can complain about it all we want. My question is, what do we do about it as the people, okay? I don't think we've put enough pressure or gotten enough answers. Frankly, I think Kevin Cryer has done a wonderful job, but I want some answers.
Well, that's really generous of you for Kevin Cryer, because I've seen so many missed opportunities in his leadership as far as election reform. But this would be a chance for him to redeem himself if he should so choose.
The mere fact that we're sitting here almost Thanksgiving and we still don't have an accurate count in Shasta County is inexcusable and reaching the point of being criminally negligent.
Well, you know, again, what's criminal, what isn't? Point is, I mean, we don't really, when you're calling out a criminal, you're calling out a criminal. You're not, you know, I mean, you know, and...
Negligent.
Great word.
I'll take away criminal.
Absolutely. Negligent, I'm all over it. And I'm only... And it isn't that I don't disagree with you, Janet. I absolutely, 1,000,000,000% agree with you. I'm just tired. I think we're all just tired of the fact that we aren't getting any answers.
Yep.
So I would like to hear some from Kevin Cryer, from Chris Kallstrom, from... anybody, because I know that Patrick is going to be
on our side, and he's done a lot of work. Out of all of them, he's done the most.
Yeah, he has worked, I know. And
but it's the current board who put Tom Toler in this position, and then Tom Toler turned right around and said...
There was a reason for that.
Yeah, but he turned around and said, well, I'm not going to make any changes here. It sounds like Jeff Sessions back there in 2016 telling Trump, well, I'm not going to do what you want me to do. I'm tired of people not doing their jobs.
Yeah, I think that's a given. And anyway, we need to have some kind of, we need to get some answers on this. And it's a shame. I don't know what's going to be happening on Sovereign Minds on the show after this. But, in fact, I don't think we're all even here yet. But I'd like to know what's going to happen. I would like to, maybe what we do is give Kevin Cryer an opportunity or Chris Kallstrom, and maybe, I think we can have two of them on, I think, without the Brown Act violation, right?
I have no idea.
Because Well, yeah, it's not a Brown Act violation if you have two. If you have three, it is. We need to know what's going on with this stuff. I mean, the simple fact that this has been worse and worse.
We're paying the bills, and we haven't had a decent election for as long as I can remember. There have always been problems.
Yes. And speaking of paying the bills, this run-back duplication system, they've brought it into the office, but there's no contract associated with it. The county has not signed a contract for it. It's fraught with errors, and I don't even know if it's legal for them to come in and just volunteer these services that don't have legal terms and conditions associated with it.
Why don't we just do what the county or the city down Huntington Beach, was it? Just tell the state, no, we're not going to do it your way.
Well, but they did it because...
I mean, it wasn't over elections. It was over something else.
It was their city council.
Yeah.
And their city council's always been really good that way. But
no, it was the voters. The voters voted for
voter ID.
But the city council said, yeah, we're gonna stand up for this. I mean, I saw their mayor on, you know, everybody's seen him.
Yeah, but it was initially at the ballot box that the voters voted to have voter ID.
You gotta get it on the ballot box.
Yeah.
And then you have to be able to count it, which brings us all the way back to where we started.
The people.
Siskiyou Steve, we only have a couple of minutes here and we want to close out with our guest. What say you, sir?
Just 30 seconds. I just think this is all part of the big divine intervention that's going on. Laura Hobbs, you're an angel. I just really respect you guys down there in Shasta County for whatever you're doing. Janet, we need to get you up here to one of the Republican women's luncheons and have you speak to them. I tried to get Dr. Frank up here and the timing didn't work. But I think, Janet, you would be very, very helpful in all your knowledge of the state of Jefferson and now the voter fraud. Laura, you're welcome also, but I'm going to work on getting Janet up here. I'm sure you'll come because you're such a patriot. And
we're fighting
hard, but we need you guys. We need your help, and I keep bringing it forward, but I need a little more help from you all down there.
Give me a date, and I'm on Highway 89.
Yes, ma'am. I need to get your phone number, but I'll do that through somebody else. Terry, great show. Great show, Terry. You're a wonderful patriot. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, my friend. So we have about 3 minutes here. So, Laura, why don't you bring us home?
Well, I think, again, it just boils down to we the people, and we have to do our jobs as well. It's not just the supervisors that have to do their jobs. So we need to contact our supervisors. Talk to them in person. Send them emails. Let them know what the will of the people is on this issue. And then it's up to them to respond accordingly.
Well, I think that's great wisdom, and I agree with you 1,000,000,000%. I will do my part. I've tried to get answers, but I'll do my part. I'm more than happy to start becoming a nag.
Oh, that's just not like you.
Point is that we really do have to understand that if we're going to make this happen, we have to move them to do it. Now, we've got to stop the blaming game. We got to start the, hey, fix this crap game.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? We have to start saying, you need to fix it. You need to fix it now. Tired of the excuses. Tired of hearing all the reasons why you can't. You need to do it. I mean, frankly, Patrick Jones fell on the sword for all of us. All right? Mm-hmm. And Chris, you know, we need some help. Kevin, what the heck? Okay, we need to get this done. This has to be, I don't care if it's an emergency meeting.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care.
It needs to be an emergency meeting.
I mean, we need to get
this
fixed. This is insane. This has gone from bad to worse because of bad decisions. And sometimes when you make a bad decision, you have to go back and say, blew that one. Blew that one. Got to fix it. Hey, guys, Got to fix it.
We've also got the Elections Commission. I'll just throw that in there. They can do some stuff. They're doing some stuff, right?
Yeah, the county elections.
Yeah, they can do some stuff, but they still fall under the jurisdiction of the supervisors.
Yeah,
I mean,
ultimately,
the ultimate fault there. I mean, you know, jurisdiction, interposition, nullification, mm-hmm. The three magic words. Yes. Second only to the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Second only to it. Let's learn that. Good heavens, anyway.
Are you upset?
I'm pissed. Gosh, we go home and see Sally.
And thank Thanksgiving that she is there.
Yeah. I always do that. Anyway, folks, Laura Hobbs, thank you so much. Thank you for everything you do.
Thank you.
You are a delight. You're great in your articulation. Janet, First Lady of Jefferson, what can I say?
Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Happy
God bless
you. Happy Thanksgiving, and God bless everybody, and time has come.
For 51.
Let's get it done.
I'm agreed.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.